Welcome to the Geekcentric Podcast, and welcome back to our watch club for Star Wars The Acolyte. Even in the revelation of our triumph, you see the depth of our despair. Back to Watch Club. My name is Nate, and this is our Watch Club for Star Wars The Acolyte, Episode 5. If you're joining us for the first time, this is Watch Club, our weekly review series, kind of like a book club, but way better. Keep in mind, we will be going into full spoilers for this series and Star Wars in general, so if you haven't watched this week's episode yet, be sure to do so, and then come right back in less than 12 parsecs. Now, before we all get skewered on a lightsaber, let me introduce you to the lovely Force Wielder joining me today. He's the jovial, jurisprudent justifier of justice. He's Justin, the Jedi loving Lawrence. How's it going, man?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. It has been a tough week to be a Star Wars fan.
to be a Jedi lover.
And to be a Jedi lover, for sure, yeah. In this episode. But just to be a Star Wars fan, in general as well, with all the sort of despair and conversation that's been going on the socials, that I hope that this episode 5 has quelled any issues that people have. But I don't know. You know, Star Wars fans are a wild bunch.
If there's anything that brings Star Wars fans together, it's violence. so let's hope so. There's a lot of shocking moments, some great combat moments to discuss. Yeah. I do want to kind of just start off, though, with, you know, in this episode, we get another cool lightsaber gimmick with a shorter, detachable saber. Reminded me of the sabers, not the expensive sabers at Disney, but like the cheap sabers at Disney that you get, that people are combining like five different like blades on one saber and things like that. And you know, I think we've seen in the trailers, we've seen, of course, the whip saber that we're going to see in a future episode. You know, I think our collective Star Wars minds were blown all the way back in 1999 when Darth Maul had a double-bladed lightsaber. And then in 2014, we had the spinning two-sided lightsaber with the Inquisitors, which was sick. And then we also had the what did he have? He had like a blaster saber.
Ezra.
Oh, yeah. Ezra had the blaster saber, which was crazy. And then, 2015 comes around and we're rocked yet again by a cross guard saber with Kylo Ren. So I wanted to kind of ask you in that vein before we get into today's episode, because there's a lot to talk about. But I wanted to ask you, what if you could have a lightsaber gimmick of your own as a Star Wars character? What gimmick would you want for your lightsaber?
You know, I'm gonna say this was the coolest gimmick I've seen in the longest time. Like that thing wasn't exposed, it was hidden, it was within the hilt itself, and he detached it and it became a secondary weapon, and it was shorter because then he could wield it a little bit quicker, right? It's more of like a dagger than it is a lightsaber. And I thought that was really, really cool. I was like, whoa, that's neat, right?
The saber was revealed when he was. The two are synchronized. That's pretty cool. Yeah. No, I think when Ahsoka has her shorter blade, like Shoto saber as well, and the idea of like a shorter saber, detachable, is so cool. And I know they did that. They kind of did it a little bit in the Jedi Survivor games, where he would attach and detach the single blade.
But like my thing is that like it always felt like those, like even you're right. Ahsoka's was like definitely one was shorter than the other, but they still both felt like blades. Yeah. Whereas what he pulls out here, it doesn't feel like a full fledged blade. It feels like a short like a dagger. Yeah. Right. Like a knife. One of those like longer knives. Right?
Sure. Yeah.
So
like a hunting knife.
Exactly, like a hunting knife. There you go. That's perfect. And it's concealed within the hilt of his lightsaber. I thought that was really, really cool. It's just an added element and sort of a surprise and a bit of a delight. Because I guess it depends on what side of the blade you're on, if it's a delight.
Sure,
but,
yeah.
You know, it was pretty cool. And I liked how, you know, when you see Chimera kind of put it back together, it just kind of like clicks in, right?
Very
like
satisfying. It in.
Like,
very
I was like,
satisfying.
Ooh, that's, yeah. I could get on board. Because it doesn't look like it's made the hilt any bigger.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
They can't make these hilts any bigger. People are already complaining that they're too
thick.
Well,
Darth Maul's hilt is massive, right?
It's true. It is pretty big, yeah.
And same with the Jedi Calcestis.
Calcestis, yeah.
Yeah, from the video games, like, those are massive hilts that are holding, like, you know, again, double-bladed sabers. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Not my cup of tea. What we saw here, small, discreet, tucked away. I think that was cool. I think that was probably one of my favorite gimmicks that we've gotten thus far. Until I guess we see this whip, you know what
I
mean?
Man. Like, I'm excited for the whip. I think for me, I thought back to a character from the Clone Wars named Embo, who was a bounty hunter. And this is going to sound stupid at first, but I promise you it's cool. I would want a lightsaber frisbee hat. Okay. So it's like if you remember Embo the Bounty, he has this hat that he uses as a weapon. It's a shield. It's a skateboard or like a surfboard at one point. And I'm like, dude, if that circle around the hat was a lightsaber blade, bro, that would be the coolest thing. And I'm, you know, 100% admitting, like, me, little Coruscant boy, I don't think I would be wielding that as me. But if I was a cool, dope Star Wars character, 100% I want a frisbee hat.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
There's got to be some sort of fun name there. We'll have to talk to Kevin, but it's like sombrero, but saberero. I don't know.
Okay, like, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That would be like the fan name for it. That's the thing.
Exactly.
It would just be called a saber hat or something, but they would come up with sombrero or whatever. I was thinking that a lightsaber fork. I think a lightsaber fork sounds more practical for me.
I would like to see, if we're going to get into the modern invention of lightsabers actually being in our everyday, I'd like to see them as a set of cheese knives. That'd be pretty cool.
Just melt your cheese. Oh, you use the lightsaber knife again. You melted all the Gruyere. All right. Well, listen, before we get a flashlight stuck to our backs, causing some big old bugs to steal us away, let's get into this episode 5, dude, titled Night, directed by Alex Garcia Lopez, who also directed last week's episode Day. And I want to quickly commend Darcy for last week's little mini prediction that the episode would be called Night. He gets it. He gets a point.
Know.
Give him a point, dude. Come on.
He gets a point for sure. Okay. But all I will say is that given the title sequencing of what they've been doing, it was only logical that the next episode was going to be called Night. I loved how it was like, that is it. That's you've cracked it. I'm like, of all the things that Darcy's ever cracked, that was the most obvious, even for him. But I love, though, that that there is this parallel in the titling where it is, you know, just these opposites, right? Because that's kind of what we're playing with.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool. And it makes sense that why you would have the same director do both.
100%. And I'm really happy that was the case. And I think Alex Garcia Lopez did a great job. Episode 5 starts off again on Kofar as we see Osha waking up with the wind knocked out of her. It was like me when I fell off a four-wheeler. And she immediately searches for and finds Pip. And then she hears some sabers clashing in the distance. She runs and trips into a pile of orange dust, and she immediately sees the dead body of one of the Jedi that traveled with her. She looks into the forest to witness, and the subtitles call him Stranger. So, you know, bear with us. We're going to call him Stranger for now. Obviously, we know who he is, but and we knew who he was. But she sees the Stranger battling and killing the other Jedi. Yord is injured, and just before the Stranger is about to finish him off, Osha fires a single stun blast at him. It does nothing. He slowly turns towards her, and Yord tells her to run. Meanwhile, Mei, panicking and breathing heavily, grabs Kelnaka's lightsaber. Then we see Osha continue to run, and suddenly the Stranger is behind her. He ignites his red blade and throws it out using the Force. Just as it's about to hit Osha, Sol steps in and deflects it. As the saber is recalled back, it strikes three trees and then lands back in the hand of its master, who then disengages it. He walks forward, and the three trees slowly fall. Sol calls out, "Civilian to the ship!" And he force pushes Osha back into the arms of Yord, who pulls her away, repeating, this was such a Dwight moment for Yord. He just repeats what the boss says, and he just says, "Civilian to the ship," starts pulling her away. I'm like, all right, Dwight, calm down. But Sol looks forward. He's prepared to fight. And then we see, we cut to the title sequence. So let's stop there. A lot to kind of to jump in here. I want to talk about this first section of this battle. What did you think of the Strangers' combat and seeing all these Jedi just get killed?
Dude, it was awesome. It was so good. I think it's what everyone's been sort of waiting for in terms of the combat. Mm-hmm. We've gotten little hints of it, and we've been kind of teased with it and tantalized by it, by, you know, like with some of the force foo and the sort of hand to hand. But we haven't really seen much saber, because these sabers are treated as very elegant weapons that you don't pull out unless, you know, entirely needed. And this is obviously a situation where it is needed. So, you know, to see the Stranger moving around and using his helmet as a way to depower. Now, I imagine I've got the
source notes. Yeah. Do you want to really quickly? Yeah. I'll jump in. So cortosis is a metal, and this is from StarWars.fandom. So cortosis is a metal that had a very high energy absorption rate and transmission coefficients, which allowed even the energy of a blaster bolt to be dissipated upon contact. One of the strongest minerals in the galaxy, cortosis could even withstand the blow of a lightsaber and briefly short out its blade. It could also redirect the heat of explosions, and discovered when General Anakin Skywalker attempted to collapse the entrance of a cortosis mine, and the resulting explosion breached through I'm not going to try to pronounce that. But one of the things the article does say is, despite these advantages, cortosis was very fragile until refined, making it normally useless as armor. So it's interesting, because that means that he would have had to have refined it in some way.
He probably got it in some way refined already. But what I think it also implies is that it's not, the whole helmet isn't made of cortosis. It's
like the front part.
It's almost been applied. It was absolutely so cool.
Headbutting lightsabers, dude.
Yeah, he headbutts the lightsaber, right? Causing them to like their lightsabers to die. Yeah. And then, you know, he then proceeds to, you know, kill them by like shish kebabbing them, which was so cool. He stabs one, force pulls the other one into it.
I said skewering. I like shish kebabbing more.
The only thing I didn't like about that scene is that they pulled away for the head cut.
Yeah.
And I think there could have been a way to cut to hide it, but still show it. Like maybe he's in front of them and you just see them fall, like in a sort of a shadow. Like
it's almost a wonder, though, if the people at Lucasfilm and subsequently Disney are like saying, hey, this can be really violent because it gets even more crazy violent on screen. But maybe there's like a limit. Maybe they're like, you can do that, but you can't.
That could have been it. Do you know what I mean? Like, like everything else that
we've seen,
everything
heads
else we've seen
decapitated before.
Exactly. That's
Star
what I'm
Wars,
saying.
Right? So
I just don't understand why, like, it just felt really awkward too. Like they pull behind the tree as it happens. And I was just like, that could have been such a cool moment where you could have like, you could have cut and it could have just been his legs and the heads just fall and they just bounce out of frame and the bodies fall. Like there could have been another way to do it. But to your point, obviously there was some sort of conversation of like, whoa, let's not go crazy here. This is a murderous episode, but we don't need to see the Jedi losing their head. And it's like, I don't know, if you're going to go there, right? Like it's meant to kind of incite some fear and really, you know, level the stakes. The first person we see on is just dead already that Osha sees, and then after that it's like he mows through the rest of them.
It was still really cool to see. Like, I think despite the idea that they could have gone even a little further, the fact that they're going where they went, this is
where
what
they
I've been
went
wanting. This is where when I said last week and I'm like, I want it to be like a horror movie, I want these people to get like destroyed And they, for the most part, they do. And I think, you know, I do also want to kind of call out, I thought it was really sick when we pulled his saber back and it chops down those trees. I thought that was a really cool moment. Yeah. Gave me very much, very sort of samurai standoff moment of just like that sort of quiet thing happening. And I liked how, you know, last week I mentioned that the Jedi seem to be, or the light side of the Force seems to be more aligned with nature. And here we see the dark side killing nature just in unabashed sort of flavor. And I thought that was cool. And I also thought it was really cool, the lighting in this sequence. There's a moment where Sol is just staring, like angrily seething almost, looking at the stranger after those trees fall down, and the fire, the burning of the trees illuminates one side of his face as red and the other side, of course, off his saber as blue. And I just thought that was so cool because obviously we're learning more and more about the evil side, the dark side of Sol. And I just thought that was such a cool way. I love when they give us those sort of visual foreshadowing moments from a storytelling perspective. I just thought it was really well done. So I wanted to just shout out the lighting in that moment.
Yeah. That moment, the whole confrontation, and we'll continue talking about it, but the whole confrontation between Sol and the stranger, you know, it is samurai. Like that is exactly what that is. And it's the confrontation, the first indication of it in these moments of, you know, leading to the way the stranger just stares at him and like tilts his head like, oh, you're gonna stick around here,
we're gonna do this,
like, come on.
Yeah, that's great.
It gave me chills. I was like, yes, let's go.
It's what we wanted. It's what we've been wanting.
Yeah, it's what we wanted. The only thing is like, again, it's like these elements to me, you know, murderous rage, it doesn't really speak horror to me. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just more darkness, right? Like,
sure.
And I guess that's what you're really asking for. Because if you wanted horror, man, then you'd see those heads cut off. You'd see, like, blood. You'd see a lot more, like that sort of graphic nature. But what you want it to do is, if this is a story about the dark side, then show me the dark side.
Yeah.
Right?
And for the most part, we
definitely got this episode
it.
Is all dark side.
Okay, so despite Osha's request to go back, an injured Yord forces her to follow him and Basil back to their ship. Then back with Sol, and we see the stranger. He asks Sol if he remembers him, and Sol says he senses something familiar. They begin their confrontation, and this is where the episode, I didn't really like that they did this, but they cut away. And they go to another confrontation. I'm going to just sort of separate these, if that's okay, for the conversation. So we're going to talk about this first part of the conversation or confrontation between the stranger and Sol, and then we'll jump over to Jackie and May. So as they come to a standstill, Sol asks the stranger to show his face, but he rejects him, saying, and allow you to read my thoughts? No, no, no. They continue their battle, and eventually Sol is knocked to the ground. He slowly gets back up, ignites his saber, but the stranger is gone. Osha asks Yord, what is he? And Yord explains that he doesn't follow the rules of combat, and that he gets in your head and stays there. Osha explains to him that her mother could do that, and that she'd even seen it happen to a Jedi once, which I believe is the moment we've seen with Master Torben. So I've got three questions off of this, and feel free to go as far into these or as little as you want with these. But I want to start with, what do you think the stranger meant by Sol, asking Sol if he remembers him? Was it just the apothecary, or do you think there's more there? Because I've got a theory on this.
I'm sure you do, but I honestly think it's the apothecary piece.
Okay.
In my mind, I don't, because they don't really go back to it. Like, if he did remember him in that moment, then I would have hoped that Sol, it would have kicked in, right? Like, if as confident as inevitably Chimer was,
sure,
when he said it to Sol, you don't remember me, and then he also said it to Yord, surprised.
Well, he said surprised, right? yeah.
But like, again, it's the idea that Yord remembered him from that instance, and you know, again, it could be that Soul, that's the moment that he's referring to, and that, you know, Soul didn't actually take the time to, you know,
clock him.
Reveal. But, you know, the biggest giveaway too here in this moment I loved was, you know, and have you read my thoughts? I'm like, that's him. It's totally him. Yeah. Right? You know what I mean?
Well, given, okay. So the reading of the thoughts thing, I do want to get to in just a moment, because obviously I want to crunch on that a bit. But I do have a theory, and I do think it is more than just the apothecary. I think it's interesting to note in this sequence specifically, the stranger refers to Soul as Master Soul, which even if he never actually knew him as a master, he's heard of him referred to as Master Soul before, and I think it was when he was younger. I really think, and I this is part of a larger theory that I'm going to get to at the end of the episode, but I really do think that the stranger story is the same as May's story. And I think he had a sibling, and when he was a boy, Soul, along with other Jedi, maybe Soul was, you know, maybe he was a master at the time, I don't know, but Soul, along with the other Jedi, quote-unquote, recruited that sibling, splitting up their family. And I think, you know, what was just another mission for Soul, you know, just another mission, we got more kids, and you know, these peaceful protectors of the galaxy, that was just their mission, it was just a day in their lives, that was the day that they ruined this kid's life, they ruined the stranger's life. And I think he was not deemed good enough for the order, but his brother or sister was, and I think that's what fuels him and gives him this draw to want to use the Force in a way that he wants without the criticisms or the laws of the Jedi. Does that sound like a possibility? Because I think there's a lot of aspects
a possibility, man.
With these parallels.
Anything at
this
point is a possibility. Yeah. So like I definitely think that like it's important to call it out, because there was a sense of like
reverence.
Don't remember me, and
yes,
and there's importance to it, right? So it's like, is it just that apothecary moment, like you said, or is it something bigger? I would have thought that if he did reveal himself. Mm-hmm. When he did, that something would have clicked for Soul. So mm-hmm. it basically, though, what we're saying
idea.
Is that he still doesn't remember
yes.
who he is.
Yeah, and
is
that's what the stranger is calling out here. He's like, yeah, of course you don't remember me. I was nothing to you, you know? I do want to ask about the other thing here, which is there's a line...
The ability to block, yeah, the block.
Well,
just
before I get to that, though, there is a line in episode 2... where May asks Chimer about the master, right? The dark master. And he says, you know how he is. He collects people. And last week, I thought that was, you know, of course, that was May asking in reference to the dark master. But in reality, it was Chimer, I thought, was referring to maybe his master, like a Plagueis or a Tenebro. But now I actually think that was in reference to Soul. And not necessarily that Soul was Chimer's master, but more along the lines of he was able to confidently speak about someone as the master that collects people. I don't know. Maybe I'm off on that, but just the idea of collecting people, it 100%. Just to me, it seems like that's something that is a grudge.
That's what the Jedi are doing.
Yeah.
And that's what the Jedi are doing. And I think that's the poignancy and why he says that, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And again, not obviously to distill it down so simple, but you know, you think of someone like a villain like the Joker in The Dark Knight,
yeah.
who has endless amounts of resources, and it's because he's collecting people. He's mm-hmm. collecting resources. And that's mm-hmm. kind of what I thought what he meant in that little dialogue. You know, he collects people, and I think it was in what, episode 3,
two.
Lisa? Or was it?
It's 2, because 3 was the flashback. Yeah.
Right. It wasn't 4, sorry. It wasn't when
no,
they were
no,
on
no.
the tree.
Because it was when they were walking on the mountain.
So it wasn't episode 2. It was episode 4. They were on Kofar in
You're
episode
right.
4.
It was episode 4.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. Okay, cool.
You win.
Okay, cool. So yeah.
You can put your glasses up higher than mine.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think when he says that, and, you know, again, he's also, like, we talked about this offline because I wasn't on the Watch Club, but mm-hmm. the way he's trying to squirm his way around, you know, all of the groundwork was being laid.
Yeah.
Right. And even just how he was written and how he was approached, that there was elusiveness around his character, and it was inevitable that we would get to the outcome of him being the stranger. But, you know, the idea that there's a deeper connection between Soul and Chimere, it's very interesting, because it might tie into, I'm wondering if we might be on the same page in terms of a theory for where the show could go or what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that could feed into what I'm thinking about. Okay, so I'm looking forward
you
to
save that. You save
talking
that.
About it. Yeah,
His helmet blocking the ability for Jedi to read his mind. To me, the only thing I can think of, because we've never really seen that before, and even when I've looked up stuff about Cortosis, nothing's really come up. The only thing I can think of is either he found a way to refine it in a way that allows him to have the Magneto capabilities, or the only other thing I can think of is, for a strong dark side user, maybe in order for a Jedi to actually be able to control their mind, they need to see their face. Like, maybe that's an aspect of it.
They need
like
to
they
make
need
eye
to
contact.
Read. Yeah, I think that's got to be what he meant.
Yeah, because if at the end of the day, I think that's it's very much, you would imagine that would be the case, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't really identify who a person is if you don't have the person's eyes and face to kind of connect with. So
yeah.
that feels that way. But I don't know if that's the additional bonus that the Cortosis does. It blocks Force users. I doubt that's what it is. Because then there would be more of that. We would see more of that.
Yeah. Now, the last thing I wanted to ask here really quickly, just with Osha mentioning her mother's ability to stay in your mind, how do you think that plays into this? What's the connection between the stranger and the witches?
Well, I know that one of the mothers,
mm-hmm.
Mother Coral, wasn't seen in this whole death sequence. And a lot of people thought that the master would actually be her, the internet. But I was thinking, like, you know, in this moment, they obviously give a pause here for Osha to make this very arbitrary comment about, like, you know, I saw this, you know, my mother used it, and, you know, I've seen it work on other Jedis. It's like, okay, so we're meant to think about this for a moment. Mm-hmm. And so has Mother Coral been the one that's trained Chimere? And not as like there is two, right?
Because
as we will get to it later, there's a very bold statement that Chimere makes that feels like he's trying to do something new with the teachings that he's been taught.
Hmm.
And I think that's why he's been after May and Osha. And he knows their story. And he knows why they're vulnerable and why they can be utilized, or specifically May, could be utilized in a way to infiltrate and break the cycle of and the dream, quote unquote dream, of the Jedi.
See, I like that a lot. Specifically because, you know, I think that could anger a lot of people who are like, oh, Plagueis is in this show and Tenebrae is in this show, and it's like, okay, maybe not. And honestly, if they are, cool. If they aren't, cool. Or Coral. I think Coral is a great choice for that role. I like that a lot.
She was so angry at the Jedi too.
Well, and I think the interesting thing about that, though, is that the stranger, you know, we see in this episode, he's about to stab May. So you're right. Like, maybe he was trained at one point and had Coral as his master or what have you. But clearly he doesn't care about her anymore, because I don't think she would want her daughters to be.
Yeah, but I don't think he's doing this. I don't think he's doing this for her.
Yeah.
Her.
Yeah.
Like, I think Mother is long dead now.
Mm,
do you know what I mean? But he has been left with this.
So,
you know, with this training.
So that's another interesting thing too, because in the trailer for the upcoming flashback sequence, we do see Kal Naka. It does look like Kal Naka's eyes are blacked out. And now maybe it wasn't Anisea. Maybe it was Coral. Maybe it was a young stranger.
Well, we'll get there, but there's a lot of insinuating remarks in this episode that have me second guessing what we saw in that flashback. So we'll talk about it.
Okay. Okay. Let's keep going here. We're going to get to the Jackie and May stuff now. So this sequence, you know, when you get to a fight that you've been waiting to see for like four episodes and it's, oh my gosh, it's going to be so cool. And then they immediately cut from it. It's a little disheartening. I was a little okay with sort of how they managed to sort of piece it together in the end. I was like, okay, fine. But when we talk about clunky, it definitely felt clunky. Okay. May is apprehended by Jackie as she's leaving Kalnaka's domicile. Jackie attempts to arrest her, and the two enter some dope hand-to-hand combat. Eventually, May manages to get Jackie held back with a blade to her neck. Jackie does like a double headbutt move. A lot of headbutts in this episode. She does a double headbutt move to escape and manages to get May into some binders, subduing her. Jackie uses the force to pick up Kalnaka's saber, and then out of the darkness, the stranger runs, which was scary. Like, that's horror right there.
No, that could have been, again, that could have been done a lot more scary. Like, the fact that when she looks up and then you just see him in the thing, I would have... Yeah, but I would have, I think they, again, I don't want to interrupt your flow.
No, it's okay. So the stranger runs and attacks her. The stranger disables one of her blades and holds her as she blocks him. She manages to ignite Kalnaka's saber and continues to, she gives like a little smile, and continues to fight back. Then the stranger witnesses May running off into the forest. He lets out a frustrated sigh and engages with Jackie again. And after a series of fantastic blocks, her saber is now cut at the emitter, and in disbelief, she looks down and then up again, and she sees that the stranger has yet again, like Batman, disappeared. So let's talk about these incredible combat moments with Jackie here. I love Jackie so much.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, this is one of many moments of where you're meant to appreciate this character. And I think it was at this moment I was like, is she going to die in this episode?
Yeah.
Right? Like, is she going
so
to?
Cool.
Because she's so cool. And it would be the one that would hurt the most in terms of like taking away.
Mm-hmm.
So again, before we get to all of that, but yeah, this again, another great example of combat and non-lightsaber combat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like hand to hand, real kung fu, mm-hmm. blocking, kicking, maneuvering, a little bit of force stuff thrown in there as well. And I just love the irony of the fight. Mm. You know, she's become such great friends with Osha, you know, and here she is fighting her twin sister, who's more or less the identical version of her.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, she doesn't hold her punches.
No.
She understands the stakes of what's at hand. And, you know, she is a pupil that should be admired. And I like, even when he said that, I was just like, yo, she's going to die. Like,
yeah.
I'm just like, I don't know if I'm ready for it, but, it was really cool. Is this where, this is where she does the dual lightsaber thing.
Yeah.
Is this part?
Yeah. She has the dual blades, and then you get that sort of like,
oh, it was cool. The crisscross,
the
crisscross reveal,
but then
it looked so Ahsoka.
Oh, very
Ahsoka.
Just
so cool. Yeah.
But I loved her like short, like bursting shouts, like ah, ha, ha, as she's like blocking him. I'm like, that is so like, it just gave me vibes of Power Rangers, but also like anytime you're in like a martial arts classroom, right? You'd hear them, you know, kind of letting out those shouts. And the choreography in this sequence is phenomenal. I mean, she's been kicking ass since X-23, and it's on full display here. There's a reason she was brought in for this role, and it was just so good. And, you know, talking about how you mentioned how she doesn't hold back. She doesn't hold back even with her words. Like when she says to May, like, you're under arrest for the murder of Master Gandara, the murder of Master Torben, the murder of Master Kalnaka, and the fire that killed your family. Like, damn, like she, like, that's wild. And it kind of just goes to show how she wholeheartedly believes, you know, what happened to May. And she must have been told, I guess,
Osha,
a little more, or to Osha, right? But like what May did. And I guess she was told a little more information.
I'm sure
Sol
she
at
probably,
some point.
I'm sure there was, because it did seem like there was like a full report about what happened.
Yeah.
Right. And that you know,
she must have heard it.
There just wasn't a mention. There wasn't a mention of a twin sister and stuff like that. That Master Venestra said, like, you know, why wasn't there a mention of this?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that being the case, I think what's interesting here is in some ways that sentiment of words for the fire of killing your family, it's really for OSHA that she's saying that, mm-hmm. right? Like she's apprehending her, not, you know, for all the crimes, but also for her sister, mm-hmm. who you also wronged. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's like, it's like a little jab and a reminder of what's happened. But again, we don't know if that's what's actually happened. And that's what we'll talk about at the end here.
Yeah.
But yeah, the combat was so well done in this sequence, and how it moved from, you know, Jackie to May right into Jackie and the Stranger, mm-hmm. the dual lightsaber, the way she was maneuvering with it.
So
yeah,
good.
There was a reason why Daphne Keene was brought on for this show, and she like fully owned these moments.
So good. So good. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to this next sequence here. So as Yord and OSHA move further into the forest, she requests that he turns off his lightsaber, telling him that the light attracts them. A little bit of obvious foreshadowing there. The Stranger follows May and catches up to her, and they do this like really weird, like sort of like zoom, like cut of just the face of the Stranger, like sort of like floating. Almost looks like he's floating.
See, that to me was very horror. The way it snapped while May was running, it like snapped into her mind of seeing him like right in front of her face. Like to me, that was really intense.
It gave me like
those
Sam Raimi
cool horror moments.
Like horror
exactly.
kind of vibes.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
not like the cheesy Sam Raimi stuff that he does. But
no,
yeah.
No.
Okay, so
Evil Dead, you know, like that sort of stuff. That felt like, that feels very
classic.
Classic, yet, you know, not too intense in the in the sense of like, you know, very very much a characteristic.
Yeah.
More so than a like a sort of stylistic thing.
So he catches up to her, and she asks him for forgiveness, saying she was weak. He's like, "You've always been weak." And just as he's about to stab her, Sol uses the Force to pull him back. Jackie slides in. So cool, this moment. Jackie slides in, and the two of them engage in two-on-one combat. Back with OSHA, for some reason, she convinces Yord to go back and devises a plan to bring the bugs along with them using the flashlight on her pip droid. Back at the fight, Sol pushes the Stranger back far enough to a point where Jackie engages him on her own. She slams the back of her saber twice, the hilt of her saber twice, into his mask, causing it to break and fall to the ground. She charges towards him, letting out a scream, and she stopped dead in her tracks as he detaches another blade from the back of his hilt and stabs her not once, not twice, but three times. She falls to the ground, and it's revealed, dun-dun-dun, Chimer was the Stranger the entire time. So, Justin, let's talk about this, Jackie's death and the reveal that it was Chimer the whole time.
Well, let's start with Chimer, because we've already been kind of talking about it. We've been talking about all of these
since
elements.
Episode two. Since, we've been talking about Chimer being the bad guy.
For sure. We've always had suspicions.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. Yeah. I think that what this episode does really well, outside of just the reveal of Chimer as the Stranger, is that it kind of gives justification to some of the choices that were made in the previous four episodes.
Yeah, I would
agree. Not full like redemption, but
some
like,
of the dialogue
like,
choices, especially with Chimer.
Sure.
I think we've talked about in the past how it was kind of strange how he just sort of, Master Sol, like, was that his name? Like, it was just very, you know, it was cheesy Palpatine Revenge of the Sith style dialogue.
Yeah, well, in the next moment when he snaps, when he sees May and he goes, "Hello."
Yeah.
Like, he snaps into
that
the Chimer
character. So good.
Yeah, it's so good. And you know, the groundwork was laid in those first four episodes that really give, you know, in episode five, it serves as a really great payoff. So I'm glad we were right. I think the internet won on this one more so because everyone was suspicious of Chimer. They got the Professor Quill vibes from him.
Yeah.
Is it Quill? Is it
Quill?
Coral. Yeah. Professor Quill.
Coral,
that's interesting.
Not Coral,
Professor
but
Coral.
Coral. Yeah.
Coral. Coral. Professor Coral.
Yeah.
He was giving off Professor Coral vibes the entire time. So it was really cool. And Jackie's death, like we talked about it, you know, it's It's sad.
Tough. Yeah.
Three. It's just like not once, not twice, but thrice.
Three holes.
Interesting in a triangle, too.
Yeah.
With the triangle, we've seen a lot of that symbolism
they
around
the
Sith.
Triangle on the dark side.
But
yeah.
Yeah, but also when we were with the Covenant, we saw a lot of triangle mm-hmm. elements, mm-hmm. triangular elements, and you know, even I think wasn't it like May or Osha's sketchbook was a triangle. I thought that
yeah.
was weird. I was like,
yeah.
I was like, why is it a triangle?
It's a weird shape for a book.
Yeah, for a sketchbook. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe so, she was only meant to make like little flags or something, and then she's. Like,
I guess, or
it
was like, I guess if you opened it like a notepad and it was yeah. like a diamond, but then the tops are like really. I don't know.
No.
It seemed like really weird, but the fact that triangles were so important that they decided to put it into a sketchbook, I still remember that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's sad, it's unfortunate, but again, the ground. Work for the last four episodes with Jackie's character, the appreciation, the mm-hmm. love and attention to her, it really does make this hard. Like this moment, I was like, no,
yeah,
I knew it was gonna happen, but I still like, I was like, oh,
yeah,
no.
She's so cool, and
all we have left is Yord. Oh.
Well, for now, but no, yeah, I think the her going out like that is just one of those things where it's. You know, it's the classic TV trope of oh, I really like this character all of a sudden. And I mean, we liked her the entire time, but now I really like her. And then she's gone. She's taken out. I think, yeah, everyone on the internet knew that it was the stranger was Chimer. But as underwhelmed as I was that it was him and not something a little more intriguing, I will say the reveal, the way that they did this reveal was spectacular.
So beautiful.
I think yeah. it the reveal itself exceeded what was being revealed, if that makes sense, right? Like, I think it yeah. was so well done. It was so immediately brutal, and it just, it instantly shows you the other side of this Chimer character of Manny Jacinto, and I just thought it was so good, and yeah, man, the detachable saber and the bam, 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 just out of, just seemingly felt like out of nowhere, it was so good. It was so
well,
good.
Yeah. Even like as he stands there, you know, Manny Jacinto, like we haven't gotten a word of line, a line from him yet
yeah.
as this, you know, maskless character. We'll get there because the acting is it's incredible.
Yeah.
But you see it in his demeanor, the way mm-hmm. his shoulders, he's an entirely different person. So good on Manny for creating, matching what was asked of Amanda Stenberg to create two distinctly different characters from one another that
he had to do the same
feel.
Thing.
He had yeah. to do the same thing. He absolutely did. And he didn't have to actually play, I guess he is playing two characters to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this duality, but you know, you can see it right in the moment. And again, a huge shout out to the choreography. I know we've been gushing over it, but like the way that they were able to kind of bring the Duel of Fates vibe into this you know 2-to-1 combo of, you know,
yeah.
Soul Jackie versus the stranger, and almost do a reverse here where the master is losing the Padawan versus, you know, how Obi-Wan lost his master.
Well, even Qui-Gon getting hit
that.
In the head with the
exactly.
saber hilt, right?
Yeah.
And that's how he
yeah.
went out. And now we've yeah. got her doing the same thing to him, but she's the one that gets... Yeah, man. Oh, so good.
Yeah,
it's
good.
It's one of those things that it's like, Jackie, honestly, will, because of this episode, will be an all-timer, I think, as far as just from this show, at least. I'm really
I can imagine people are going to be complaining that they
yeah.
shouldn't have killed her.
Yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, that's where we're going.
Yeah. Okay, let's keep going here because another death is about to happen. Soul shouts, no, and then quietly says, Jackie. Chimer slowly walks toward him, saying, was that its name? And Soul tells him she was just a child. But Chimer shrugs it off, replying, you brought her here. He looks towards May and uses the force to pull her. He like does a spin attack move or spin move. He throws his
cloak
yeah.
over top of Soul. It was like such a cool fancy dance move, and then
really
he force
sick.
Pulls.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Manny Jacinto is definitely doing some breakdancing moves in this episode, yeah. But no, he uses the force to pull May into his hand. He pulls her throat into his hand. And he holds his lightsaber you know, ready to ignite it against May's face. Sol drops his blade and asks him, "What are you?" And he says he has no name, but a Jedi like Sol might call him Sith. When asked what he wants, he says the freedom to wield his power the way he likes, without having to answer to a Jedi like you. He says he wants a pupil and an acolyte, but that May went back on their deal, exposing him. So now he has to kill every last one of them. Using the Force to grab Chimer's helmet out of nowhere, Yord swoops in and attacks him, using his helmet to block his blade, while Chimer uses his gauntlet to block Yord's blade, and both blades are disabled. As Yord struggles in a hold, he recognizes Chimer, and Chimer says, "Surprised?" and then overpowers him, brings him to his knees, and then snaps his neck. So first off, we have to give a moment of silence for the Yord Horde out there. All right, that's enough. The Yord Horde, we feel for you. Obviously, you know, you can already tell we were probably more Jackie fans than Dwight Schrute Yord over here. but still, I would never wish this on a character like Yord. What an incredibly violent death. Correct me if I'm wrong, Justin. I don't think we've seen people hung in live action Star Wars, but we've never seen their neck snapped in front of
us.
Have
we seen people
In Ahsoka, there's a character that was hung. We don't get to see them. We just see their feet struggling. But we've never seen anyone's on screen neck getting snapped. What did you think of this first time type of death in Star Wars?
Well, it's raw. It's very brutal.
Yeah.
you know, again, leave it to Yord. Like I said, I was like, damn, we're just left with Yord now? Like, you know, he's got to have a redeemable. It does also make sense if you did keep him around.
Yeah.
Only because then the audience needs to start getting behind this character, and maybe he starts to find, this could have been the moment where he found redemption, because it kind of feels like he kept going against Osha and saying he has to follow the rules and follow the rules.
Yeah.
Right? He was sort of cowarding a little bit. But then Osha's like, listen, they're all going to die. Mm-hmm. We need to go back and help them. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, you know, you're right. And then he comes swooping in, picking up the helmet and bashing him over the head.
Yep.
And I love there's just the moment that they have where he's like, you know, he looks at Chimer and he says, you. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he is surprised because he thought of him as a weakling. He thought of him as nothing.
Yeah.
And here he is, you know, the one that's, you know, he's scared of.
Yeah.
Right.
And then he gets tossed aside. Like he snaps his neck and then tosses him over.
Oh, dude, he just like treated him like he was absolutely nothing. Yeah. And I was like, well, here we go. Clean slate. All the pieces are, you know, all the extra pieces are off the board.
Yeah,
now.
Off the Dejarik board.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, yo, huge shout out to you for recognizing the Dwight moment, because that is so, that is legitimately
I'll
how
have
you
to make
describe
the meme.
This character.
I'll have to make the meme shortly. I'll have to cut together something, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to just call out, you know, again, this is the going there that I've been wanting to see in Star Wars since the Book of Boba Fett. You know what I mean? Like we had some opportunities to go to some dark places with Book of Boba Fett, and they just didn't. And they here, you know, it took four episodes, but we got there. We got there.
Well, it had to again. I don't imagine like. I think in a world where you're imagining that, like, not you, but audience members imagining that this would be the tone for every single episode. Mm. No, this is one episode. You build towards this episode and make and take things away from people. Like the ending of this episode is such a dramatic shift from where we started.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's going to be a whole different story for the back three episodes or four episodes. How many more episodes do we have? I think it's three
more, yeah,
episodes, yeah, that we have left. So, you know, again, you have to have, this can't be just something that's sprinkled, like littered throughout, right? Like,
sure.
Or else it is a sort of dark thriller ass, you know, fucking Star Wars show.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is more about having tones of that. And this episode serves to be just like this sort of ultimate, what everyone was expecting this show to be, moment.
Yeah.
And it gives it to us. And, you know, snapping his neck, I thought that was pretty raw. You're telling me you can't, you've done beheadings before. You couldn't find a crafty way to do a beheading that gave you the sound effect and sure, gave the, you the still like, the impression.
The kunk or something. Yeah,
yeah exactly. Yeah. Without showing anything, you know, in, rather than sliding
yeah, right.
behind
we,
a tree.
We did see literally a character with Dooku, right?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like again, that's a movie. I understand. So maybe you're trying to say PG. I know that.
And that
more,
was, I guess, that was Fox era, right?
Sure. Yeah. But I think that there's clever ways that you could do it
for sure.
that still hit home that horror. But this was terrifying. He dropped him, snapped his neck. That neck snapped, bro. Yeah. Like I don't even know how they did that. Like yeah. it looked like he
actually
broke
dead.
His neck.
Oh no.
So, but you know, like shout out to Charlie Burnett because he's. Like he did a really great job. Like I know we harp on him and we're like, yo, you're like the buzzkill yeah. of this group.
Yeah. But womp, womp.
At the same time, he I think that was sort of his character. And he played it and he did it really, really well. It's like George Costanza.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not to say he is George Costanza, but like sort of like George Costanza. Where George Costanza can kind of annoy you sometimes, but you're like, damn, Jason Alexander. You play that character so damn well that I actually yeah. am annoyed by you.
I think so. Yord is a really great representation of Jedi hubris, and I think all the way up
yes.
to his death. And I think that
Absolutely.
Was kind of what this was meant to show. I do want to call out earlier when
Good
Chimer
show.
Says, was that its name? And, you know, I think you could look at that as being disrespectful because he's a bad guy, but I also really think he's taunting Sol in that moment, clapping back at him for what Sol did to him. When Sol says she was just a child and he goes, you brought her here, almost as if the Jedi, when they did whatever they did to Chimer as a kid, didn't see them as kids, right? Chimer is calling out the dogmatic practices of forming personal relationships or not forming personal
yes.
relationships, and referring to Jekki as an it is him making fun of that. It's him taunting Sol by saying like that's an it. That's a soldier. That's not a child. That's not Jekki to you, right?
I don't know if this would be right to say, but like it almost treats her Jekki as an object.
Yeah,
and that's what
I mean. Droids are objects. Droids are soldiers.
I know, but what
clones
I'm saying
clones are
is,
objects.
Is that,
clones are soldiers. They're owned and sold and. You know what I mean? Like in from a war perspective, that's kind of how we're seeing the Jedi seeing these kids, or at least from an extreme standpoint, I think that's how Chimer is seeing how the Jedi see these
yes,
kids.
Yes, he doesn't see them as people. He sees yeah. the Chimer believes that the Jedi don't see these children as children,
mm-hmm.
but as objects.
Yeah.
Objects for them
yeah.
to benefit them.
Yeah.
And I think that that's why he refers to it.
Yeah.
And he as you pointed out, digs at him to highlight the idea that he shouldn't have
yeah.
a attachment to this thing, it, the object.
And that
you know,
was
the way he
and
diminishes
that was great
it.
Writing in this series. Like, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I think this series has good writing and bad writing. I think that was great writing in terms
I
of dialogue
honestly
back
think
and
it's,
forth.
I think it's outstanding performance, though. Like,
True.
Manny Jacinto yeah. is on fire in this
oh,
episode.
Oh, and his arms,
like,
bro? He is
bro.
Yoked.
The moons?
He's yoked.
The moonlight has gave
Each muscle
arms
was a moon?
Exactly, like. Dude. And, like, the sort of the perfect symmetry of them. Oh my God. And they were all over the internet. Daddy Arms,
oh,
you know,
man.
Darth Arms,
I'm in.
You know. Yeah, for sure.
I'm in.
But yeah, he again so transformative, an entirely different person in these like little moments that we have with him. I also just want to point out, you know, this is the first time we have heard the word Sith.
Yes.
In this show, if
yep.
I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And he doesn't even, then people are going to go off the chains with this, but he's not saying that he's Sith.
Yeah.
He's saying a Jedi like you
would call me
mm-hmm. Sith. You would see me as Sith.
Yep.
And, you know, his deep desire, his wanting to have a pupil, an acolyte, is I think him wanting to go to the next level of actually being a Sith.
Mm.
Because if I'm not mistaken, the Sith, you know, I'm not all, you know, I'll lower my glasses.
Sure.
So I'm not as thing, but there's always two. And if
yeah.
there really hasn't been that sort of idea of always being two, and he's just one, he's technically not a Sith.
Mm.
He's just a dark, wielder, right? Yeah. Like of the Force. Like there's no sense of that. So he's looking for someone that can be his pupil, his acolyte, so that they can go to this next level, which is, you know, I think, again, it's very intentional in this moment. It really paints what he's looking for. He's mm-hmm. looking for his own master apprentice, master Padawan relationship that, you know, as you've been pointing out and maybe highlighting in some instances, maybe was taken from him, that he was not deemed worthy mm-hmm. to actually have
yeah.
because of his incapabilities. And here he is at the top of his strength. And he's like, yo, I should have a Padawan.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool.
I have a bigger theory on that that I will get to at the end for sure. But let's keep going here. We've got a couple more moments to talk about. With a scream of anger, Sol attacks Chimaer, managing to actually start to beat him. He gets him on the ground and kicks him in the stomach, like across the room, essentially. And just as he's about to kill him, Osha screams out to him, telling Sol to stop. Chimaer says, "This is your master? You trust him even after everything he did to you?" Sol says, "His mind has been twisted by darkness." And Chimaer says, "I've accepted my darkness. What have you done with yours?" Osha gestures to Sol to get him in on her plan about the bugs. And then she runs and attaches Pip's head as a flashlight to Chimaer on his back. The Umbra Moths come in, and as he's getting overwhelmed, Chimaer gets carried away by them. Osha turns to Sol and asks why Chimaer said what he said, asking him why shouldn't she trust him? He tells her he'll explain everything, but then he's immediately stunned by Mei, causing them to now have to confront one another in a conversation that for some reason kind of has to happen in a slightly different location. I don't know what the reasoning behind that was. It wasn't that far away, but it just felt weird. Anyways, Mei says she did what she needed to do for Osha and their family. She says the Jedi got what they deserved and asks Osha if she's forgotten who they are and where their family came from. Osha says Mei started that fire and that she would have been dead if it weren't for the Jedi. Mei says they've brainwashed her and that she can help her return to herself. She tells her that she loves her and asks her to choose her, to choose us. Osha, unconvinced again, attempts to arrest her sister. Both struggle until finally Mei pushes Osha against a rock and she's just knocked out. Mei picks up, I think it's Yord's lightsaber because it's yellow, and gives herself a very convincing Osha haircut. Okay, so this is kind of the part of the episode that I was a little bit sort of, it didn't work as well for me, as you might be able to tell by some of my moments in that description. Justin, let's talk about the bugs, and then this conversation between Mei and Osha. What did you think of the bugs?
Well, the bugs were silly.
They bugged me.
I think, they definitely bugged me too. I thought it was just a very convenient, easy sort of thing. And if that's why we kept going back and forth, you know, as you said, breaking up that sense of continuity between the fight sequences and jumping to Osha and Yord in the forest and them trying to escape, like it just created such a unnecessary break from what was really great, like moments, like choreography moments and fighting moments, just, you know, touch base with Osha and where she was and how she gets back. It was silly. But I think if anything, it's the moments leading up to that. Like you talked about the hand to hand combat between Chimaer and Sol. Oh my God.
Yeah.
This was, again, another raw, you know, it felt like a real fight. I don't think we've seen anything quite like this in Star Wars that isn't, you know, that's this well choreographed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in Rogue One a little bit, but this was
like full on, he was decking him.
This was anger.
Like
this was anger.
Punching him in the face.
And when Sol goes to, you know, force grabs his lightsaber and ignites it, you could see, like, he was ready.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm eliminating this threat. Like, this needs to be taken care of. And I gotta say, I think he definitely missed the opportunity because this could be the reason why the Sith end up becoming something.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, 100 years later. But that said, you know, he has this moment of a reminder of his, you know, where he comes from. But you talk about good writing and like the line of, you know, I've accepted my darkness. What have you done with yours? Like,
fantastic.
Like again, Mani Jacinto is just, is incredibly, talented as an actor. Yeah. Honestly, like, you know, you had the opportunity to interview him. Yep. And
I told him I was keeping my eye on Chimere, and he said, he told me I should. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, you did. And we all did. And, but you know, the character that he is so focused and so determined in, you know, this stranger, this other character to Chimere. And it's so funny to see him in these interviews, because that's the character I can see him connecting with.
Yeah.
Probably the most. Yeah. In the way
he's quiet,
talking about Chimere. Yeah. And just very thoughtful.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And insightful. And I think this is what we're seeing from this stranger, these other character to Chimere, mm-hmm. you know, that's not much of aloof and, oh, you know, don't use your mind tricks on me. Like, you know, he played his part, and now he's showing what he really is.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. It's so well done. Yeah. But the whole shtick with the bugs carrying him off, I'm like, okay, well, that's obviously not going to kill him.
Yeah.
Right. And that's going to happen.
I want to jump in there about the bugs. So he, you know, the use of rules, there was a lot of mentioning of rules, which I think is really interesting here. Chimere calls them out, and you know, it's the reason Sol can't kill him, which is just a wild level of restraint, but you know, I guess it's the right thing to do. But Chimere, you know, kind of just wants to form his own rules, it seems like. And I think that's what makes him such a scary enemy, is he knows the rules of the Sith. He knows the rules of the Jedi, and he doesn't prescribe to either. Instead, he makes up his own rules. And I think that's kind of a really interesting aspect about him. The bugs carrying him away, it really bothered me. It felt very cartoonish. It felt really silly. And it was such a disappointing way to end that conflict. The only thing that I can think of to defend it in even the slightest, Justin, and I don't know if they're really going there with this, but maybe that's a setup for Chimere to see Osha defeating him without a weapon, right? The whole aspect of you have to defeat them without a weapon. Well, Osha did. She defeated Chimere in a creative way without a weapon. And so maybe that makes Osha more intriguing as a twin for him to bring on as his acolyte. And that's why they did this. That's the only thing I can think of outside of just, we need to find a way to end this conflict. Okay, great. We're going to have her bring the bug army. You get what I mean? Like, it feels clunky, but if they're going to find any way to redeem it, that's the only way that I can think of doing it.
No. I think what they needed is a very, it's clear that they needed some sort of plot element that forced them all to be divided,
yeah,
so that you get this switcheroo at the end. And I think it was really only relevant here.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll see any sort of like justification for why the bugs had to come in.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the problem with this show, I'm finding, and it's general with these five episodes of why we get clunkiness, is the duration of the episodes.
Sure, yeah.
Like, this is a 34 minute episode
that is actually 27 minutes in total, realistically.
Sure,
yeah,
right, yeah, with like, you know, bumpers on the end and stuff like that. This should have been a longer episode with those bumpers, like pushing like 40 minutes, maybe 42.
Yep.
That way you wouldn't have had to have so much of like this sort of back and forth of cutting between
one fight to another,
battle to,
yeah,
Osha, yeah, to Yord, and bringing
there were
them
at least
back.
Two instances where Yord and Osha didn't accomplish anything, yeah, by showing them. Yeah.
And it was just some arbitrary line, or it was just some sort of story element.
Yeah.
And it felt really silly. And it feels like that's has to be put there for justification for where they end up in the end,
sure,
at the end of this episode. Yeah. So rather than just giving it a set moment and maybe not coming back to it until they unite and they try to save the day themselves and Yord dies,
yeah,
they gave us these fragmented moments sprinkled throughout. And the bugs felt like part of that,
mm-hmm,
too, right? Because they're sort of attached to it. As being an element to that
but
sort
why
of
not,
side
but
story.
But why not use Yord's death in a way to, and I get it, you're talking about splitting them up so they can do the switcheroo, but the, you know, we've seen countless times where a character dies, like think of The Force Awakens, when Han Solo dies, they run away, you know, that it just feels like a more natural Star Wars-y way to have accomplished them getting away from Chimere in this moment. And yet they just bring in these bugs, and look what he did to those Jedi. You're telling me he can't handle these bugs, bro? And he can't use the Force to pull a lightsaber off his back? It just felt really inauthentic.
Or like a light thing. Yeah, it felt like this is how you're going to dupe this guy. Yeah. Is like you're going to slap a little light on his back and he's going to get carried away by some giant June bugs. No, thank you. Let's go to the other part, though.
Sure.
The conversation between May and Osha. You know, this feels like we're just treading on the same dialogue that was kind of sort of had, but as children.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they haven't really gotten anywhere with trusting each other. There's some interesting lines here, like brainwashing.
Yeah.
You know, the only other time I've ever heard that referenced was via Anakin to Obi-Wan. He brainwashed Padme.
Sure. I think we've seen on social media, Amanda Stenberg, she's had a lot to do. She's said in interviews, she's had a lot to do with the story of May and Osha. And also she's a huge fan of Hayden Christensen. So you best believe she pushed for the use of "they've turned you against me." You know what I mean? Like
sure.
Her as a fan of Hayden Christensen getting to say "they've turned you against me" as May. Kudos to her for that.
Cool.
If that's great.
A writing thing,
yeah.
That's a writing thing, then good on Amanda for pushing for that, because it definitely hits the right tone. But again, it's just it didn't really resolve anything. You know what I mean? Like it just kept the idea of like what really happened that night.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like there's clearly some sort of discrepancy of information here, which I think is partially maybe, you know, getting into, obviously, as we get into foreseeing things,
mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be kind of part of Osha's story. I think she was, you know, her mind was manipulated to remember the events differently than they actually were.
For sure. And I'm looking forward to seeing that. And I think to your point about some of the dialogue things that we had before being a little bit more resolved after this episode, I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing some of these dialogue moments resolved a bit more and maybe looked back at a little more fondly. But I will say, there's just such a muddiness to Osha's intentions. We're now on episode 5 of this season. I should be able to know what May wants and what Osha wants. And I don't. I don't know. May was going to turn herself in 10 minutes ago. And now it's just her and Osha. And maybe she's like, you know what? It's just you and me against the world, and I don't have to turn myself in now, obviously, because all those Jedi are dead. So maybe that's part of the change of heart. But then to immediately then go, okay, well, now Osha is going to arrest me, so now I'm going to turn against her and hurt her. To me, it just feels so wishy-washy with these characters to the point where I'm like...
It's a constant thing.
And I want them to be more dedicated to what they
sure.
want to do. And then see yep. how the story affects them in that sense. But I just, to your point, in terms of the episode length, maybe that's part of this clunkiness in terms of just sort of feeling like maybe we just haven't had enough, we don't get enough time for them to sit in these decisions, to see them actively making them, to the point where they just have to like jump from one mindset to another. It was really frustrating.
Yeah, and like to me, that was the biggest flaw in last week's episode was, you know, this suddenly, you know, she's so... May has been so hell-bent. She's killed 2 Jedi
yeah.
already.
Yeah.
She's so hell-bent on this thing. And then she's like, you know what? I'm going to go turn myself in. And I'm just going to, I'm going to move on. And you know, I'm going to let them know who I know and what I know. And I'll be fine. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And it's like, but weren't you like for the last 3 episodes out to murder Jedi?
Yeah.
Like what, why are you suddenly doing that? And we constantly saw that in these moments, even in this episode,
yeah.
Yord was so against going back. And then all of a sudden he's like, okay, they're going to die. Okay. You said they're going to die. We're going
yeah.
back. Like, it's like, you know, he and look, he died.
Yeah.
So, but it's one of the many, issues I've had with this series as well, is just there's no certainty to characters' motives.
Yeah.
They're always shifting, and it doesn't seem like it works for a character like Chimer,
and to a certain degree it works for a character like Sol. I just don't know if for your main sort of 2 characters, I want to be on that journey with them. I don't want to be insanely confused
yeah.
by their decision making. I want to be like, oh, that makes sense. We're 5 episodes mm-hmm. in. I shouldn't. Anyway, let's get to our final section here, our predictions. I want to ask, what do you foresee happening? But we get to this last section where we see good old Basil, that old boy. He picks up Pip's droid head. So thank goodness we didn't lose Pip in this episode as well. May, now dressed as Osha, recovers Sol and tells him they have to get back to the ship. On the ship, we see Basil suspiciously watching May as she follows Sol. Then, back with Chimere, we see him pick up his helmet and his robe, and he discovers Osha injured on the ground. He uses the Force to heal her injuries, or at least it seems that way, and he laments what extraordinary beings we are. Even in the depth of our triumph, we see the depth of our despair. He covers Osha with his robe, and then the episode ends. All right, so, Justin, we've got Chimere, or the Stranger, or whatever we want to call him, with Osha. And May is now with Sol. What do you foresee happening next, or foresee happening next?
Well, the old switcheroo has just happened here.
I mean, like, for House of the Dragons fans, tell us if you've seen this before.
Yeah, exactly.
But sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and like you know, I'm like, part of me thinks that there's the opportunity for the next part of this story to be about the ship.
Yeah.
And about how Osha becomes the acolyte and May becomes the Jedi.
Sure.
And this opposite. But, you know, and the way they've been so wishy-washy with character motives and they're willing to bend the knee at anything. Yeah, you know what? You're right. I don't need to be
I'll be a Jedi
anymore. Oh, you know what? I'm not going with you. Oh, you need me to go? Fine, I'll come with you. Like, you know, it would make sense if that's what's going to happen. But it also doesn't make sense if they were to suddenly push it that far.
Yeah.
Right? Like, maybe to a certain degree, Osha really discovers what happened to her that night through Chimere and his abilities and whatever he is going to be able to do. And I think we're going to see how that happens, and we will relive that moment and that day or that night. In some capacity through some sort of like exploration.
Sure. His narration
mm-hmm. of it. But again, it also makes you wonder how much of it is being altered as well. If the idea, because the indication here that Osha's been brainwashed,
mm-hmm.
that's what I want to kind of stick with. I think the way the final moments of episode 3 play out, it is so scattered. It feels so fragmented. And I now starting to think that that is by design.
Yeah.
In the sense of we don't have all the right pieces of information, because we are seeing that evening or for that night from the perspective of Osha. And I think her mind was tampered, because she woke up on the ship at the end of that episode.
Yep.
After what she remembers had happened. So who's to know?
She wasn't knocked out when they ran off, right? Were running towards the ship, she wasn't asleep.
No, she might have, like, again, it just, there's something that makes me feel like what, you know, Chimere's been hinting at, what May's been hinting at, is that they manipulated your mind to make, you know, her sister look like the bad guy in that situation to protect something else that we really don't know wholeheartedly what it is, right? And you know, to your point, we still have a flashback scene to see. I think it'll be Mother Coral who's going to be the one that's going to take over Master Kalnaka, and you know, Torben and the fight that's going to happen. It might be at the hand of Mother Coral,
mm-hmm.
Which might give us the indication of why she left, and or maybe that she got away as well, and you know, was broken from May. But I don't know. It's hard to say. But the other option too is I like the idea of Osha sort of learning the truth and knowing that it's the truth and confronting that truth right from Sol. Do you know what I mean? Like, she gets the strength to confront him about what really happened, because you know he was her Jedi master. Because I think there needs to be a resolution. There was these constant hints like, I will tell you later, I'll explain more later. And we haven't gotten that yet. And we really do need to hear what happened from Sol rather than anyone else. So I don't know. I'm kind of like this thing. I'm wishy-washy about what I foresee happening. But like, I don't know. I really do feel like this episode though was such an interesting reset to the show.
Yeah.
In some ways, and it shifts the pieces on the board, and it really sets up like anything you think you might have known of where the show was going over 8 episodes. Mm-hmm. At this point, it's changed,
yeah.
Right? So there's new theories, and they're probably not in any way related. But I'm dying to hear your theory, so I'll stop talking, so you can let me know exactly what you foresee happening.
Well, just before, I want to say what I foresaw.
Oh well, fuck.
What I foresaw, I do want to shout out. I want to shout out the fact that we saw two twins in this episode that weren't the twins, and they were having quite a battle on with a Dajaric board that I'm pretty sure they bought on Batuu because I have the same one in my closet. So a little bit of like marketing there, but yeah, we see those two big twins and they're playing Dajaric and they're playing. You know, it's like chess and it's just interesting the parallels between two twins, but. Sol is with May. I think his shock in combination with maybe, I guess, her dark side ability to cloud the vision of a Jedi is why he's not able to tell that that's May. I do find it ridiculous that it feels like they are setting up for a reveal that he's going to see that she doesn't have a tattoo on her arm.
Yeah.
And that's what reveals it, not the tattoo thing on the head. I don't. Maybe she finds a way to hide it. I don't know, but the fact that she doesn't have a tattoo on her arm because of what they focused on earlier.
When she walked over, did she have it?
I think she did. I mean, she had her you know, she had her bangs covering it, so like you couldn't really see. I feel like she's gonna try to find some way to cover it up. Maybe she puts a headband on or something. I don't
sure,
know.
Maybe. I totally forgot about that. Yeah. I just like, yeah, that's really interesting because. Then that's not gonna. That's not really gonna last.
No,
you know what I mean.
No,
like,
exactly.
Like there's gonna be a confrontation.
I don't think
sooner. But I think Basil, our boy Basil, is on the case.
He's on the case.
Yeah.
Basil.
Yeah.
Now regarding the sequence with the ship kind of spinning through that we saw in the trailers, I actually don't think. I think that that's actually from one of the flashback sequences. I don't think, because I looked at all the ships that we've seen so far, and none of them are that ship. But I don't think, to your point, I don't think they're going to, if they do get off Kofar, May and Sol, they're not going to get very far. I think they are going to be pulled right back. Now, in terms of Vernestra with her light whip, from what we've seen in trailers, she's on a forest planet. Now, that's probably a confrontation between her and probably Chimer. But it could also be a flashback to Chimer's origin on Kofar. And I think it would explain why he knows that planet so well, is that he's from Kofar.
Oh, that makes
sense.
Is
a theory
that
I have.
Cool.
I also want to throw out another thing that I'm foreseeing. I think he's, to your point, and you already said this, he's going to try and turn Osha by explaining what really happened. But I think in terms of one more theory regarding Chimer, and this is throwing me off the whole thing when it comes to the master and the overall dark master. I actually don't think there is one. I'm leaning now more away from my original thoughts that I'm sure a lot of people on the internet are talking about with Plagueis and with Tenebrew. Maybe they get a name drop. But this whole series seems to be showcasing the origins of Force users beyond the Jedi and beyond the Sith. We had what seems like it could have been the origins of the Night Sisters, maybe, or Force Witches in general. But there's a music cue. There's a music cue, Justin, at the beginning and end of this episode, and that music cue is Kylo Ren's motif. And I really think that Chimer is the first Ren. I think the Knights of Ren are, they're focused, yes, they're far in the future, I understand, with Ben Solo, but they had to start somewhere. And from what I've learned about the Knights of Ren, the knight who inducted Kylo Ren into
the
Knights of Ren, well, yes, it's his lightsaber, but he also took his name from his previous master. So my thought is that we are witnessing the first Ren. I think they're very much doing, you know, they do things their own way. Look at the helmet, the way that his helmet is designed.
Yep.
It looks like the Knights of Ren. I think this is the beginning of that splinter order. And I think even if Chimer or Ren or whatever his name ends up being, is training under Plagueis or Tenebrew or whoever, I think he just wants out because he's realizing that he's having to follow too many rules. The rule of two and the other rules that the Sith might have. The Jedi, they have rules, and those rules ripped him and his family apart. So I think this disdain for rules overall is what's leading him to want to create his own order, his own rules, and very much find a pupil to start that splinter order with. That's my foreseeing theory, and I'm happy to say that I absolutely did consider that prior to going on the internet and hearing other people talking about it. But it was one of those things where I love John Williams' music. I love that Kylo Ren theme. It's so distinguishable. And so hearing it at the top of the episode, I was like, oh, that's interesting. But hearing it at the end with a focus on him, bro, come on. Come on.
Yeah. I when I heard it at the end, I was like, is this the beginning of the Knights of Ren and like that whole splinter organization? Because when you hear it at the top, it's sort of subdued and you're like, oh, was that Kylo's song? I can't remember. And then you get to the end there and it's so obvious.
It's the exact
way he's standing over top of her and it's like, nah, 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 nah. I was like, okay, no, that is 100% his theme. And I think that that's a really interesting way to go with this sort of dark side of
exploring
the
dark side with the Night Sister or the beginnings of the Night Sisters, exploring the dark side with the beginnings of the Knights of Ren.
The origins of fractions, right?
Yeah.
Of and how
splinter
fractions. Splinter fractions within this idea of how do you wield the Force.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the thing that everyone keeps freaking out about. It's like, well, come on, she said that the Sith haven't been around for millennia, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, who's to say that this is the Sith? This is the first episode that there was even a reference of Sith.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of, you know, I know Leslie Headland's been very bold and just said, like, you know, if I was to do something in Star Wars, I was really interested in focusing on the Sith.
Mm-hmm.
But that could mean a lot of things in her mind
of
how do you get to the Sith?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe for whatever reason, because we know that there potentially is more seasons, we will get to this idea of seeing the sort of beginnings of the Sith. And I think this is like the prequel to the Sith in a lot of ways, right? And how things are. And like you said, if he is being trained by one of those, because I honestly don't think he is, though. I think his master is probably not around anymore. That's why I wonder if there is a relationship there with Mother Coral. But I think the other thing too to keep in mind is like just the fact that, you know, going back to what I was saying about the idea of maybe Osha being brainwashed, it might explain a lot as to why Chimer uses the defense of like, don't do the mind thing with me. Like,
yeah.
Don't read my mind.
Oh, yeah.
Like he knows about what they've done.
What was a goofy Chimer moment is now so relevant.
And so relevant and so important and maybe very integral to understanding what's happened to Osha, what's happened to him, if there is a history there. I'd like to see if there is a history there, if there is something. But I'm also kind of like cool if they do a Joker, again, bringing up Christopher Nolan's The Joker, where it's just like, we don't know anything about this guy's past.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just about his future and what he's doing.
Cool.
I think that's also
really cool. That's cool, too.
Yeah.
Let's get to our overall final thoughts on this episode. I know we've gone a little long on this one, but I mean, this was a big episode. And even though it didn't really seem like a lot happened, there was a lot to chew on. So let's hear it, Justin. Your overall final thoughts on this episode, episode 5, Night, directed by Alex Garcia Lopez.
I think, again, like we've been kind of saying, this episode is the best of the season so far. In its delivery, in its execution, there's still that hint of clunkiness overall, but I think this episode got a lot right, but it's still not like a perfect episode.
No.
While it being the most strongest and the way it kind of shifts everything, I'm really hoping that fans can kind of start to see that what's happening here isn't as decisive as we might think. Whatever we might think it might be happening or where it's going or the time period and everything and who's involved and who's around, you know, 100 years before, this is all new and this is all fresh. And I think they got this. They got this.
Okay.
I think that there's been thought there in regards to where this, how this is going to fit into the bigger thing. And, you know, let's just give them time and see what they do. But yeah, it's definitely far from perfect, but it definitely gets a lot right. And then you see it in the choreography, you see it in the beauty of how they were able to spend the last four episodes making characters matter and then suddenly just taking them away. Yeah. You know, again, for everything that it gave us in this episode, some of what's happened in the last four episodes that might have been like, what, why, seem to have been redeemed, but not everything.
Yeah.
Because there seems to be a bit of a struggle with balancing what's important for us to have and what's not necessarily
sure.
important.
Yeah.
And how much time we're spending on things. Yeah, it's definitely great. I hope fans can chill and just enjoy the rest of the season and then, you know, talk about, you know, bigger picture stuff. But yeah, and Manny Jacinto on fire.
Chef's kiss.
Dude is brilliant.
Yeah. His acting was as big as his muscles in this episode.
Dude, so good.
Yeah, so I wanna, like, you know, I won't dig into it too much, but I'll start off with what I obviously didn't like in the episode. And again, I think to your point, the good outweighs the bad. But yeah, the episode structure, the way they tied together what was essentially one big confrontation, it was very clunky, constantly heading back to Ocean and Yord while jumping between these fights that we really want to see and stay with. And it's like, oh, this is so cool. And then they just cut away. Just never really, it never felt good. It never felt like it really made sense. I guess they kind of tied it in at the end, and that was exciting, but it didn't, he's there fighting Soul, and then he runs away, and it's just like, don't run away. I think the bugs taking Chimera away, for as much poetry and as much meaning as I can imagine myself or any fans giving that moment, it still doesn't take away from the fact that it was really dumb, and it was just such a cartoony and cheesy way that just didn't align with how powerful they've shown this character, you know, how much they've built him up to be in this episode. And then, yeah, lastly, I just want Maze and Osha's intentions to be clear. You can have a mystery show. That's totally fine, but I need an anchor. I need an anchor to latch onto and say, I'm on the journey. I understand their decisions. And you're kind of giving that to me and then taking it away when May just randomly decides that she's going to hurt Osha after telling her, I love you and I want you to be with me, choose me. It doesn't feel right. And again, if there is some explanation to that in terms of brainwashing or potentially maybe something actually wrong with May, like in her brain, that's very possible. Something, she actually might have something going on. That's possible. I wouldn't put it past them to bring in, you know, some sort of mental illness or what have you, that she could be going through that's causing her to go back and forth. I don't know. What is that?
I find it like, that's like really reaching. I don't think that they're going like, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I think this is just, to your point, it's they're missing the anchor. They're missing, like, and it's so obvious. Like, they set it up really well with this idea, in the third episode, with the flashback of what Osha wanted and what May wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, May wanted that security of her family, what it meant to be safe with her mothers and her sister, and her sister just wanted to leave, and she felt hurt by that.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you know, the fact that, why did Osha want to leave? What did Osha want? She wanted something for herself.
Yeah.
She wanted her own identity. And in a lot of ways, you could argue that that is actually very selfish. That is probably why she would be a better acolyte in the end, because she does want something for herself. But at the end of the day, I totally agree. I think the wishy-washiness, and honestly, last week's episode, I was just floored by how quickly May was just like, I don't need to do this anymore. I'm like, what? I'm like, you've just spent the last two episodes, I guess, because three is a flashback.
Sure.
So determined to kill these Jedis. You've killed two.
Yeah.
And you're suddenly so quick to back out. The writing doesn't believe in these characters.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yep. And that's what you want. You want the writing to believe in the characters.
That said, the darkness in this episode that we highlighted, the way that not only do they kill off Jedi that we all knew were going to die, they were all there, that's what they were there for, but to kill off Yord and Jeki in such brutal ways. It just added so much in terms of stakes, and it brought me to where I've been wanting to see this series and Star Wars go. If you're going to go dark, go dark. And, you know, I think there are enough people who enjoy Star Wars who can handle it. You know, we talk about the Star Wars having to make sure that, you know, people going into these shows, that they're aware of what they're getting into. And if they've got younger ones who enjoy Star Wars, what does that look like for them in terms of violence and what have you? But no, you know what? We can have shows for older audiences, PG-13 audiences, if you will, for this show, I guess. And we can have shows for younger audiences like what we're going to be getting in the future. I'm happy that they chose to at least go this far with this episode. The fight choreography, the different ways of fighting, the double lightsaber combat, the headbutting of sabers, just the wild, outlandish, and scary way that Chimera was killing everyone was so well done. And it's exciting to see these fights play out, even if we did have to jump back and forth between them. Huge shout out to Daphne Keene in this episode. She was incredible. Lee Jung-jae was absolutely fantastic as well. And then Manny Jacinto, we just can't give him enough praise. He absolutely brought it. And from Jason Mendoza from The Good Place, to get this, to see how he's able to tap into these two versions of Chimera was so, so good. And I bought it, and his arms were jacked. This is my favorite episode so far. Like you said, Justin, it wasn't perfect, but it was wild. It was a dark ride, and I'm even more interested to see where the show goes from here, because so far we've really only been able to nail down the prediction of who the Dark Master was, and that's about it, besides Darcy fully getting 100 million points for naming this episode before the name dropped. But that is it for this week's episode of Watch Club for Star Wars The Acolyte. We hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, make sure to subscribe to us wherever you like to listen to podcasts, if you haven't already. And if you want to write into the show with your thoughts or your predictions on the shows we cover in Watch Club, well, you don't have to get shish kebabbed on a lightsaber or have your neck twisted. Instead, Justin, can you let our acolytes know how they can reach us by holomessage?
But of course, they can reach us at wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. That's wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. Or they can reach out to us on the app formerly known as Twitter at GeekcentricYT and on Instagram at wearegeekcentric.
Absolutely. And we also have our Discord, which you can use. You can join using the link in our description. Come over. Let's talk about The Acolyte. I'd love to know your theories after this episode. We'd love to hear from you. We also have a ton of other great episodes covering the latest in movies and TV shows, including our recent spoiler-free reviews for House of the Dragon Season 2, Inside Out 2, The Boys Season 4, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, Doctor Who, and Star Wars Tales of the Empire. We've got some great interviews out now, like our most recent interviews with the Canadian animators from Pixar who worked on Inside Out 2. Justin had a great chat with them about their roles at Pixar, what emotions are driving their consoles in their headquarters, and their favorite Pixar movies. So be sure to check that out, those interviews out, as well as all of our interviews, both here on your podcast service of choice or over on YouTube at youtube.com/geekcentric. Leave a 5-star review. Give us a comment, leave a like, subscribe. The hot geek summer just continues. The temperatures are rising. We've got some hot geeky stuff coming, and I'm very excited about it. So we've also got our episode 6 Watch Club coming up. Hopefully we'll get Darcy back and we can revel in whatever mysteries that episode unveils for us. But Justin, thank you so much for joining me for this Watch Club. And as we say, you're with me,
and I'm with you.
Always one,
but born as two.